You're listening to The Maastricht Diplomat.
Today we're talking about healthcare. When I came to Maastricht, I didn't really think about health insurance. There was already so much to coordinate, and as a European citizen with European insurance, I didn't really have to, right? My stance on this changed one warm September day. I was leaving the faculty building and jumped on my bike, excited to meet a friend. About 250 meters later, my bike flipped. I managed to pull up my elbows just before I hit the pavement. My face introduced itself to the street. Luckily, someone was there immediately, called an ambulance for me and blocked the street I was laying on. Coincidentally, my roommate had left a cafe nearby at the same time. They squeezed beside the cars that were blocking the street when they saw me. The ambulance arrived, took me and my roommate to the hospital, where I found out I did not have a concussion or spine injury. I was lucky, but it did break my elbow. This event started my personal interaction with the Dutch healthcare system, and we will hear more about my experience later, but I am of course not the only one who has a story to tell about healthcare. In this episode, we will learn about the experience of someone moving to the EU from abroad, working here, and about the Dutch health insurance system in general, and of course, what you need to do when you need healthcare. First, I would like to introduce my guest.
I am Sophie. I'm a second year digital society student here at Maastricht University. I'm from the United States, a suburb just outside of Atlanta, Georgia.
When you came to the EU, to the Netherlands, how did you prepare? Like, what did you do? Was healthcare on your radar at all?
Yeah, so it very much was. You know, obviously moving here, there was a lot of different aspects that I had to consider. Everything from getting my visa to figuring out where to live. And obviously healthcare was a big part of that. It's a little bit tricky because the healthcare that I have under my parents, it really doesn't cover anything outside of our network. So, you know, hardly anything outside of the neighborhood that my parents live in. Even getting healthcare in different states is a little bit difficult, let alone internationally. But I also knew that there was a good system here that, you know, would take good care of me, and I just had to figure out how to use it. And so for the first about a year of living here, I was not working, so I did not have Dutch health insurance. I was just, you know, surviving on my American health insurance.
How would that have worked, having U.S. health insurance here?
I think probably I would just say that I had no insurance and go from there, because, you know, effectively it would be the same cost on me to just say that I had no insurance versus having American insurance. I would have just, you know, paid whatever I needed to out of pocket.
As you can tell, having non-EU health insurance can lead to you paying your medical bills yourself, in total. If you're unsure about what your state of health insurance is, you can always ask your health insurance provider if you are covered here. This has something to do with networks. In the US, health insurance providers usually have special contracts with certain healthcare providers like doctors or hospitals. If you go to one of those so-called in-network healthcare providers, you pay less because of that contract. Out-of-network providers are either not covered at all, or your insurance charges you a higher deductible.
Yeah, being here, it's so far out-of-network. You know, sometimes with out-of-network care, if you're just on vacation and you have some accident, you know, still within the States, sometimes you can, you know, sort of have a conversation with your insurance company and sort of make a deal and figure out them paying part of it, especially if it's like life-saving care. But being here, it's so far out of network, and trying to work in between languages and in between currencies, it would be such a mess that it wouldn't even be worth it. So I would just pay whatever a doctor or a hospital here charged me, and probably wouldn't even run it through my insurance. Essentially, with American health insurance, you know, you have your deductible, and so you have the certain amount that you pay up until a certain amount, which I think is about $3,000 a year. And then from there, insurance will start paying, you know, whatever goes over that. So if you are, you know, a regular healthy person and you just go to wellness checkups and, you know, maybe you get sick once or twice a year and need some medicine, you know, you pay your premium and you pay just whatever you need to go to the doctor up until you hit your deductible. For example, if you had some tragic accident and needed full skeletal reconstruction, then it's a great deal because you only pay up till your deductible and then you don't have to worry about the rest. But regular, normal, everyday people don't usually need that much care.
This means that effectively Americans pay a lot of their healthcare costs themselves. Deductibles are also a thing in the Netherlands. Here you can choose to either pay more per month or have a higher deductible. The minimum deductible for 2024 is 385 euros, to which you can add a voluntary deductible on top. So for the lowest monthly premium, you can choose the highest total deductible of 885 euros. In the US, the situation is a little bit more complicated.
Yeah, your in-network and your out-of-network deductible are different. So if you go to a doctor that has, you know, a deal with your insurance company, then your prices are lower and your deductible is lower. But if you go out of network, so a lot of times if you need to see a specialist or if you're traveling, things like that, then you will pay out of network, which usually the deductible for out of network is so insanely high that nobody ever really reaches it. Another aspect of American health insurance is that if you have health insurance, if you have a good job and you have a benefits package, then you have a health savings account. So a certain portion of your income, part of your paycheck, goes into your health savings account, but it goes in pre-taxed. So a lot of what you pay for your medical expenses with is pre-taxed if you have that money within a health savings account. And you can even use that on, you know, if you just go to the pharmacy and you buy, you know, ibuprofen, you can use your health savings account and that will count towards your deductible.
So that means you have basically a fund that is giving you tax savings on whatever you spend on healthcare.
Yes, exactly. It's a great system for a lot of people. My family health insurance is through one of my parents who works for a nonprofit. So, you know, the income is not very high, but they're very generous with their benefits. So they even put additional money into that health savings account. And so you're able to save a lot on your taxes. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, for some people, that does incentivize not going to doctors. Because if you're able to just not spend that money, you just get to, you know, save on your taxes. So it's a little bit of a give and take with that, of trying to balance, you know, good preventative care, but then also balancing, you know, not going so often that it's pointless. But thankfully, I was healthy that year. I didn't get sick. I didn't get hurt. I never had to go to the doctor. Didn't have to try and use my American health insurance here. And then I got a part-time job. And so now I'm eligible for the Dutch public health insurance. And picking that was a process in and of itself.
When I got into the ambulance, one of the first things the paramedics did after he made sure I was okay was asked me for my health insurance card. As an EU citizen, I have a European Health Insurance Card, or EHIC. The card is a magical key to free health insurance in Europe, and everyone who has European health insurance can get it for free. With this card, you get basic coverage of the country you are in. We will hear more about what this means exactly later. In most cases, the European Health Insurance Card will just be on the back of your regular insurance card. It's blue and has all the necessary details on it. In some cases, though, depending on the insurance provider you have, you need to request the EHIC in addition to your normal card. Some insurance providers also let you print out an additional international proof of insurance. And if you don't have a European health insurance card, that may be an option for you. Without a proof of health insurance, though, you will have to pay for your healthcare in advance, out of pocket, in all but the most urgent cases. You can get the money back, though, through your insurance provider, but this can be a lengthy and complicated process. As easy as life with a European health insurance card sounds, it can really pay off to put some more research into your insurance and what it covers abroad. I found out the hard way, because there's one crucial piece of care that is not covered by the basic insurance in the Netherlands. If you work in the Netherlands, you are required to get Dutch health insurance within 3 months of the beginning of your employment. Otherwise, you face a fine from the CAK. Naturally, as Sophie started working, she got into the Dutch health insurance system. Here is more from her.
I was shocked when I found out that my health insurance is subsidized. So, you know, I pay a certain amount per month to the health insurance company. And then I, you know, submitted some documents to the Dutch government and, you know, gave them my bank account information. And then I receive a certain amount of money from them every month to, subsidize that health insurance, which, you know, coming from the States, that was a very, I don't want to say a foreign concept, but, you know, the only, you know, our sort of versions of subsidized health insurance, socialized medicine is, you know, Medicare, Medicaid, Obamacare, things like that. And that's just a whole mess within itself. So I was shocked by how simple it was and by, you know, me, somebody who is, you know, I'm not living in poverty. I'm, you know, I don't have any life-threatening illnesses. And that even me, just a regular person, a student, that I was able to get that subsidy was really incredible. I think the most confusing part of it all was just picking which insurance company and which plan. Because again, in the US, your employer sometimes will offer you two or three different benefits packages based on your family, based on your medical history, things like that. But here there were so many options, especially me as just a single person. You know, I don't need a family plan. I was overwhelmed with choices. And, you know, there's several different websites that show you all of the different options, and you can sort of enter in your information and they sort of suggest what, you know, which plans you might like. But still with that, there was maybe 15 to 20 options. And, you know, as a student that, you know, growing up, I never had to deal with my own health insurance and, you know, anything like that. It was always just through my parents. So I didn't even really understand how any type of insurance worked. So it was, yeah, a challenge to choose that. But again, the university student services was really helpful. And they sort of explained the various different plans and which one most students choose. And then from there, it was all very simple. I submitted an application online. I think within 24 hours, it was approved. And then from there, I through the government website, applied for the subsidy. And I was even able to receive back pay on that subsidy. So I think I got two additional months previously of worth of subsidy because I had been working for those 2 months. So I had been charged for insurance for those 2 months. And so I received the full amount that I had paid. There was a situation after I had gone to the doctor where I wasn't sure if something was supposed to be paid or not. So I called them and they answered right away. And within, you know, 5 minutes, everything was resolved. So overall, it's just much quicker and people are much more knowledgeable and willing to help you. And it was, a very, very smooth process.
And which plan did you end up choosing?
Yeah, so I chose a basic plan for now because I believe you can change your plan one time per year. I think it's 100% covered on medical and 75% covered on dental or, you know, something around there. I guess I'm just hoping that I don't get into any accidents. I still am not an expert on it all. Still trying to learn, but sticking with the basic for now. And and hoping that I never need anything drastic.
With your European health insurance card, you can get the equivalent healthcare of the basic plan in the Netherlands, which, as I found out, does not include physiotherapy. The rules about what is and what is not covered by Dutch healthcare insurance are complicated, but insurance would only cover whatever care is charged through the EHIC. Unfortunately, I did not find any therapists who would bill over that card. In the end, I had to pay for the rehabilitation myself. More information about what is covered where is, of course, in the description. Apart from this, though, my experience with the Dutch medical system was positive. Almost anybody I talked to spoke close to perfect English. They explained a lot of what they're doing and were happy to answer all of my questions. As for Sophie?
The in-office experience, again, was just a huge shock, but I think a good shock. So I needed to make an appointment, and so I called the general practitioner's assistant, and I talked to her first, and she, tried to give me some advice and asked me if I felt that that was sufficient or if I still wanted an appointment. And I can see how sometimes, if you, have a your kid has a cough that is sounding a little bit strange or things like that. Sometimes those problems can be solved just by the assistant and you don't even need an appointment. But in my case, I did want an appointment. It was scheduled for just 10 minutes where, the time slot was only 10 minutes. They said that if I wanted more time, I could book a double appointment and have 20 minutes, which was surprising to me because I'm used to, you go and you sit in the waiting room for, 30 minutes, and then you go into the room and you sit there and you wait for the doctor for another 30 minutes, and it's a very, very long process. But once I actually got there, they had, I think, a little bit of paperwork, but, not nearly as much as I'm used to. And I waited, maybe 5 or 10 minutes, and the doctor came out to the waiting room to get me, which I was not used to. Usually it's, in the US, it's a nurse practitioner who comes and gets you from the waiting room and, takes you into the examination room. And so I was surprised by that, and the fact that the doctor was just wearing regular clothes, which again, there's sort of like a white coat syndrome where, there's a sort of fear induced just by, professionals in that sort of white lab coat environment. And so that made me feel very comforted, very safe. It felt like a very human to human experience rather than doctor and patient. And the physical aspect of the appointment was, I guess, much less invasive than I'm used to. I was expecting that, especially for my first appointment, it's the first time they're ever seeing me. They don't have any information on me. I was expecting, okay, they're going to take my height and my weight, and they'll take my blood pressure, and they'll listen to my lungs, and they'll look at my eyes, and they'll look at my ears, and, they'll ask me, about my medical history and about my vaccine history and all of those things. But none of that was done. I walked in and it was just a desk in an office, and I sat down at the desk and I had a conversation with the doctor. He really didn't even need to, poke and prod and do all the things that I was sort of expecting. So I think that was also very comforting, because I do have, some medical fears that are definitely made worse when somebody is, inside your bubble and is constantly disrupting certain things. So that was a much more enjoyable experience. He prescribed me an ointment. I had an issue with my skin. And the pharmacy was downstairs. And so after my appointment, I went downstairs and I got it, and that was it. It was very quick, very easy, very comfortable. And I was, just really pleasantly shocked by the whole thing.
I managed to break my elbow in a complicated way. Before I could get surgery, the swelling on my elbow had to stop, so I got sent home with a cast and a good supply of paracetamol. I will spare you with details, but I think I can almost call myself a cyborg now with the amount of metal I have in my arm. The hospital has a digital portal you can log into with your DigiD to see the test results, medical notes, and appointments. Sometimes they even make phone appointments, so you don't have to come all the way there. Maastricht is home to one of the top hospitals in the Netherlands, the Maastricht University Medical Center, or UMC+. As a research and teaching hospital, it has close ties to Maastricht University. In fact, the university and the hospitals are in the process of merging together. As of January 2024, that has not yet happened, but it's on the radar. You might have already seen the medical complex or the signs leading to it, but can you just walk in if you have a medical issue? The answer in most cases is no. While MUMC Plus does have an emergency room, you cannot just go there without an appointment. If you have a medical emergency, there are two ways to get help. If you are severely injured, have life-threatening symptoms, or you need immediate help, just call 112. An ambulance will show up, keep you alive, and bring you to the hospital. If you can still make it, though, you should go to your general practitioner, or GP. When you move to the Netherlands, you should register with a GP, also called family doctor. They are your key to the Dutch healthcare system. To get almost any specialized healthcare, you need to see them first and get referred by them. Your GP can also refer you to the MUMC emergency room at the hospital. The good thing about this system is that it shortens waiting time, as you already have an appointment. If you, like me, break a bone in a traffic accident, you should definitely call an ambulance. If, however, the ambulance finds that you are healthy enough to go to a GP, your insurance might not cover the cost of the ambulance. Getting charged for an ambulance ride is no joke and can cost upwards of 900 euros. In most cases, using your common sense will be enough to avoid that situation, and it's always better to call 112 if you're not sure if the situation is really life-threatening. If you or someone else has a medical emergency on university grounds, however, you should not call 112. The university and its faculties are big. In some cases, they span across entire city blocks. If you would call 112, the ambulance might go to the wrong entrance and waste precious time trying to find where the patient is. That is why Maastricht University, and in fact most Dutch companies, have their own first responders. So, if you have a medical emergency on UM grounds, there's a special phone number that you can find in the description that you have to call.
Or you use one of the telephones in the hallways and call 13333.
This special phone number is also written on signs next to the telephones, so you can't miss it. With this phone number, you connect to UM's own emergency response team, who can in turn connect you to emergency services. For more information on what to do when you need help and where to get it, look in the description of this podcast episode.
Lastly, do you have any more thoughts on healthcare systems?
I just think it's interesting, and I still don't know where I stand on, you know, the social difference and the social perception of healthcare and socialized medicine between Europe and the U.S. You know, generally in the United States, people have people and or politicians, you know, the system that has been set up have decided and have chosen that the individual freedoms of a person to, you know, choose their own doctor and be able to, you know, scour and hunt for a doctor that they really like and, you know, someone with really good bedside manner and someone who really respects you as a person and, you know, because not everyone is always offered that. Being able to have a lot of individual power over your health insurance has been prioritized over, you know, sort of the more empathetic approach of believing that everyone is entitled to health insurance and health care, and, you know, paying certain additional taxes and having a cost difference so that everyone is provided quality care. It's just a very different, a very different social belief. Whereas, you know, here in Europe, there tends to be a little bit more of a communal effort towards things like education and healthcare, which I think sometimes I can be pessimistic and I can think that, oh, the U.S., you know, it'll never change. It's too ingrained. People will never, you know, people will never care enough to try and redesign the system in order to help others. But I think I'm still hopeful. And I enjoy living here and being able to be a part of this more communal society. But it's very interesting to have lived in both places and to still hold some of those individualistic values while living in such a group society. So it's again, something I'm still learning a lot about, and I love having conversations with people about their own unique experiences, and I feel like I'm constantly changing my perspective on it. So, yeah.
And with that, I would like to thank my guest, Sophie Richardson, and you for listening to this episode of the Maastricht Diplomat podcast. My name is Finn Gerke, writer, producer, and musician of this episode. You can find additional resources like links that hopefully help you on your own healthcare journey in the description. Listen to the show on your independent podcast app, use Spotify or Apple Podcast, where you can leave us a review or write an email to journal@myunsa.org. We love to hear your thoughts and experiences. The Maastricht Diplomat is a committee of the United Nations Student Association. You can find us and them on Instagram and LinkedIn, but our true home is maastrichtdiplomat.org. Thank you for listening.